just when you thought there was no hope for baby boomers. It's the Rational Boomer Podcast. Logic. Common sense. Compassion. Yeah, who knew? Now, here's Mike.
We are back on the Rational Boomer Podcast. Hopefully your day is going well. It is Sunday. We're in the weekend. Not a lot happening. A few things here and there, but still plenty to talk about from last week. We have some emails and such. Tomorrow, I am headed to Florida, to Miami, and then to the Florida Keys. I've got a number of podcasts already set up to run when I'm away. But I also will be doing TikToks, and I may do extras on the podcast just to keep up with the happenings and the news of the day. So we've got you covered. It's just a little different situation. I'm not going to Georgia. I'm not only going with my wife. So I don't know for sure what my flexibility will be and the amount of time I have to record. So I'm taking precautions by putting up those podcasts. Thankfully, I have listeners that come in, and Ed came in, and we put together some good podcasts. So there'll be something for you there every day as you become accustomed to. So that's the good news. Anyway, we'll kind of play it by ear as we go, but at least we've got you covered there. All right. We have some emails. Let's get to them, and then we'll get to some of the news that's going on in this country and around the world, for that matter. First one comes from Julian in California. He says, "Hi, Mike. I love listening to your podcast, as we all do, but have you considered signing up with the Midas Touch Network? They're an independent progressive news outlet that includes the Messiah." How do they say it? I watch Midas Touch, the brothers that run the network. They also have Tennessee Brando and Texas Paul Michael Cohen. He redeemed himself a lot since getting out of prison, and many other contributors. They think a lot like you, and I think that you could reach a lot more people by signing on with them. Just a thought from Julian in California. Well, I'll tell you this. I am familiar with the Midas Touch network. I do like all the people on there. I don't necessarily like the way they do things or how long it takes for them to get to the point, but that's, you know, that's their business strategy, and they do what they do for the reasons they do it. Now, in as far as signing on with Midas Touch, I don't think it works that way. I think they come to you and say, "Do you want to sign on?" But I'll be perfectly honest with you. If they came to me and said, "Do you want to sign on?" I'd probably say no. It's not because I think I'm better than them or anything like that. What it really has to do with is what I've talked about all along in doing what I do here. First of all, I don't like joining clubs. Second of all, I don't want to be in a position where somebody tells me what I need to do or what I can't do and when I need to do it or when I shouldn't do it. This whole TikTok and podcast thing has been a grand experiment. Can one guy sit in his living room, talk the shit he talks, and get attention? Well, I think I proved that we can do that. Now, granted, it'd be great if you had 2 million listeners and all that stuff. That would be great, but that was never the goal of doing this. It was doing what I can with what I have. By signing on to the Midas Touch, if that were even possible, yeah, I'd probably get more exposure, but I wouldn't be as happy. I've talked about this. You mentioned Texas Paul. I saw Texas Paul when he was first on TikTok, and I really liked him because he lashed out and swore, not unlike I do. But then he hooked up with Midas Touch, and then all of a sudden, he pulled things back. He was very calm. He's sitting in a rocking chair, still giving great information and insights. But it seemed to me he changed his style. Now, whether that was Midas Touch doing or Texas Paul just decided to do it, I don't know for sure. But the fact is, if Midas Touch is exercising any leverage over Texas Paul, if he's good with that, that's fine. If it's worth it to him to do that, that's fine. But I would never accept that, ever accept that. Don't tell me what to do. I've been doing it long enough. I know what I'm doing that works best for me. So yeah, they've never reached out to me. I certainly haven't reached out to them. I have nothing bad to say about them. I like what they're doing. I like their mindset. I just don't know that I'm the kind of guy that needs to join a team. I'm not good at that. I mean, I can do it. I just don't want to do it. I'm retired right now, and I want to do what I want to do. Anyhow, thank you, Julian. I appreciate thinking about me. All right, the next one comes from Jeff. He says, I'm currently talking to someone on Telegram who claims to be Rational Boomer. I noticed that you're based in Minnesota. Interestingly, this person is from Florida. I presume that it's not you. Can you confirm or have you moved? Regards, Jeff. I'm getting a lot of these, and I only have one account. I have no backup account. I still live in Minnesota and at times Georgia, not in Florida. Anytime you get somebody that's asking you for something or trying to sell you something and says it's me, it's not me. I'm not going to try to sell you something. I mean, to the point where I keep getting DMs about doing the TikTok shop thing and everybody's saying, oh, you can make all kinds of money. I just really haven't felt compelled to do it. If I was doing this for money, I'd probably do it a lot different and beg Midas Touch to be on their network. But that's not why I'm doing it. So if you're out there and getting hit up by people claiming to be me, just block them. For a while, I was telling people, block them and report them. But then as more people reported these clowns, I started getting violations with regards to the Creative Beta Fund. And it was becoming annoying to trying to convince TikTok that my videos are original. I think my videos on TikTok or what I do here on the podcast are the essence of original. Like I said, it's just me talking my thoughts out my mouth. I don't know how much more original it could be. But I think I figured out that as people reported these other Rational Boomer fakes, somehow it's bleeding back to me, and that's triggering the violations I'm getting with regards to the Creative Beta Fund. So what I would tell you, I reported them to TikTok. They came back to me and said they found no violation. So TikTok isn't going to do anything with regards to this. They aren't going to do anything. So don't waste your time and report them. And if it is having some backlash on me, definitely don't report it, but just block them. Block them and disregard them. And you don't have to ask if it's me. All you have to do is go to their profile page. And if they have under 300,000 followers, ain't me. It ain't me. So anyway, thank you, Jeff, for bringing that up. Next one comes from Eric, not the Eric we know in Iowa. I think this is a different Eric. He says, I follow you on TikTok and I have a question I can't find a straight answer to. If Joe Biden passes away before the election, what happens next? Well, if Joe Biden is still the president, then Kamala Harris becomes the president of the United States well before the election. That's the first thing that happens. Then the Democrats have to decide, do we run Kamala Harris? And if not, they got to bring somebody else in. But I doubt they would do that if it's a short time before the election. How are you going to get somebody up and running and up to speed and put them up for election? I'd like to think that's not going to happen. I mean, it's reasonable to think it could, given the age of Joe Biden. But I think we're on a path of destiny. I've said before, if Joe Biden can get through the election and the inauguration, if he wants to retire after that, I'm fine with it. As long as the Democrats hold power in Washington, D.C. after the election on November 5th, 2024, I'm good. I like Joe Biden for what he's done, but he is of a certain age, and that is troubling. Death can come to somebody who's over 80 years old, and it's not even a surprise. But to answer your question, if Joe Biden dies before the election, Kamala Harris is the president. She will be the president, and they'll get a vice president. We can only presume that if something like that happened, it would be extraordinary. But if it happened, then she would be the candidate on November 5th. That's the only thing I could possibly think. All right. This one comes from Margie or Margie. Says, Trump has 6.99 million followers on Truth Social. I open an account just to troll and flip him and his followers shit. Okay, Margie, I appreciate it. I like the enthusiasm and the energy behind it. All right, this one also comes off of the podcast page. Karen says, great episode. Have fun in Key West. Try to visit Judy Bloom's bookstore there. She's got a whole section for banned books. I want to visit there one day and meet her. Take care. Happy trails. I like Judy Bloom, too. And given that my wife is a former teacher, she would love to meet her. I didn't know that was an option. I didn't know she was down there. But we'll be checking it out, as well as Hemingway's mansion or whatever he lived in there. There's going to be a lot of interesting stuff to see. I've never been there before, so I'm looking forward to it. And I like hanging out with my brother and his wife, and my wife, of course. So that's all good. And thank you very much. Thank you. All right. We've been talking here on the podcast about the Israeli-Hamas war. And I keep hearing people suggest that Joe Biden's losing all of his young supporters because of his stance on the Israeli-Hamas war. And I've said before, you know, you have to understand a lot of the things we hear in the ether is stuff that originates with Republicans. They're not much with substance. They're not much with policy, but they do have a lot with messaging. I mean, that's their whole strategy. Try to taint Joe Biden or any other opponent they might have in politics. It's working less and less effectively every day. So the thing about it is I said to people on TikTok, I said, okay, you're mad at Joe Biden because of his stance on Israel and Hamas. So what's your play after that? You're mad at Joe? You don't want to vote for him? Well, then is your play to go vote for Donald Trump? Because that's a problem. Donald Trump is best friends with Bibi Netanyahu, and they're both crazy and they're both dangerous. So that's your play. That's what you're going to do. Or maybe what you want to do is vote for a third party. Hey, that's a good idea. But here's the thing. There is no candidate. There is no third party that actually has any chance of winning. And that vote might very well be translated into a vote for Donald Trump. So once again, you're back into crazy town. Here's the thing. I've gotten to be 64 years of age. I'm not the smartest man in the world, but I have learned some things. And to the young people, here's what I'm going to tell you. I know a lot of people out there want what they want, and they want it now just the way they want it. But that's not realistic in this world. You'll rarely find that as a possibility or an opportunity. So sometimes you have to take a path and accept some things that maybe aren't your favorite in order to get to what you want. Here's the thing. You vote for Donald Trump, he's going to overturn democracy and overthrow the country. All that means is it's going to get more dangerous, there's going to be more violence, and you will never, ever get to where you want to go. You will never achieve what you're complaining about now. Never. Now, if you hold your nose and vote for Joe Biden, yeah, you may not like him completely for all the things he does. He's done some good things and maybe some things you don't like. I'll be honest, Joe Biden has some things I don't like either. But what I understand is this, patience is a virtue. And you have to have patience in life because not everything comes to you just the way you want it when you want it. So the situation we're in right now, the only option is to vote for Joe Biden. We vote for Joe Biden in November. He wins, we get control of the House, and we get control of the Senate. That is the best of all worlds. If we do that, then we can start getting things done. But after that election in November, it's on you. you young people. You have a large part of the electorate. By 2028, you will have the majority. So it's up to you to make the decision of what goes on in this country. You have the power to determine your destiny. And I think that's good. I don't want power over the destiny of a 25-year-old kid. I'll be long dead and gone when you're suffering or reaping the benefits. You should have that opportunity to decide that. Whether you're right or wrong, that's your world. That's your life. The future is yours. So what I'm saying is you have to vote for Joe Biden if you have any hope to reach your goal. You don't get it tomorrow, but at least you're on the path. If you vote for Donald Trump or a third party, you're off the path and you're lost in the fucking woods. That's what the problem is. So you may not like it. You may have to hold your nose, but you need to vote for Joe Biden in order to get you on the path to where you ultimately want to be. Now, I'll tell you something else. Like I said before, a lot of what you hear about all these young people that are mad at Joe Biden is a lot of Democratic messaging or Republican messaging. I'm sorry. And the thing about it is that I don't think it's as big a problem as what people are trying to make it out. I think the media is hyping it up because it makes good news and it's scary and it gets people to watch more. I really think that's the case. I don't think it's a big deal. I think that Joe Biden is going to win so big, even if some of the young people didn't vote for him, it's not going to matter. Donald Trump doesn't have unity in the Republican Party. He can't pull enough votes. Joe Biden does have more unity, and he will win, and he will win big, regardless of how this all shakes out. Here's the other thing that a lot of people aren't considering. We've seen these wars in the Middle East involving Israel and Palestine for decades, literally decades. These conflicts start up and then they eventually die off. There's some kind of agreement that comes to pass. I believe that's what's going to happen before the election. So then, presuming that Joe Biden is involved in this, and he most certainly will be, he'll be getting positives from how he plays this out and the fact that the war is over. As much as the Republicans want to use it against him, ultimately it will work for him. And I bring this up because there's a story that I read and I wanted to relay to you. Apparently, a Hamas delegation was in Cairo on Saturday as Egyptian state media reported noticeable progress in ceasefire talks for Gaza. But Israel hasn't sent a delegation, and a senior Israeli official, they downplayed prospects for a full end to the war while emphasizing the commitment to invading Rafah. So we're hearing that there is some progress in the negotiations to end this thing. And frankly, it's going to end at some point because it's just not sustainable for either side. It doesn't make sense to keep killing your innocent people to have this little pissing contest is what it is. And I'm not trying to diminish the danger or the people dying. I'm just saying we've got Bibi Netanyahu on one side, a terrorist organization on the other side, and they're mixing it up, putting their dicks on the table, and all the while, innocent people are getting injured. This won't be sustainable for an extended period of time. This isn't going to be like the Ukraine war. So it's sounding like we may be getting closer to some resolution to this. And we've seen this dozens of times before in the past decades, so we know what we can expect. Pressure is mounted to reach a deal halting the nearly 7 month long war. Now, this is what I'll tell you about this too. While you may not see it or hear about it, I guarantee you Joe Biden is putting some immense pressure on Israel and Bibi Netanyahu. He wants this thing stopped too, and he has the power to apply the pressure. A top UN official says there is now a full-blown famine in northern Gaza. While the United States has repeatedly warned close ally Israel about its planned offensive into Rafah, the southernmost city on the border with Egypt, where more than 1 million Palestinians are sheltering. Sounds great, doesn't it? You know, a bunch of innocent Palestinians are sheltering in this community, a million of them, and Bibi Netanyahu says, yeah, we're going to attack that. That's the mentality of this motherfucker. This motherfucker needs to be taken out of office and put in jail. If that were done, we wouldn't be having the problems here, and this war would already be over. Now, Egyptian and U.S. mediators have reported signs of compromise in recent days, but chances for a ceasefire deal remain entangled with the key question of whether Israel will accept an end to the war without reaching its stated goal of destroying the militant group Hamas. Now, Egypt's state-owned Al Qahira news TV channel said that the consensus had been reached over many disputed points, but did not elaborate. Hamas has called for a complete end to the war and withdrawal of all Israeli forces from Gaza. A senior Israeli official speaking on condition of anonymity to discuss ongoing negotiations played down the prospects for a full end to the war, and of course they would do that. The official said Israel was committed to the Rafah invasion and that it will not agree in any circumstance to end the war as part of a deal to release hostages. We'll see about that. You know, you're going to stand tall and you're going to talk loud, but I guarantee you Joe Biden is in their ear and he has the power to put a little pressure on, and he will. I think, you know, as much as the younger people and the progressives on the left want him to shut off all help and all of that, he can't do that because they're an ally. However, there is some question as to whether they're using American weapons in illegal ways, and there's an investigation for it. And if they find that out, then Joe Biden has a reason to say, I'm cutting your shit off, and he'll do it. Israeli media said that the statement had been dictated by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, whose government could be threatened if he agrees to a deal because hardline cabinet members demand an attack on Rafah. Sound familiar, doesn't it? Sounds like Republicans in the House of Representatives. Now, the proposal that the Egyptian mediators had put to Hamas sets out a three-stage process that would bring an immediate 6-week ceasefire and partial release of Israeli hostages and would include some sort of Israeli pullout. The initial stage would last for 40 days. Hamas would start by releasing female civilian hostages in exchange for Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. Now, some families of hostages accuse Netanyahu of prolonging the war for his political interest, and I think that's a reasonable perception. If he's not in this war and he gets his ass kicked out, which is likely, he will go to fucking jail. Now, Daniel Elgart, whose brother Yitzhak is held by Hamas, addressed Netanyahu at the latest rally in Tel Aviv. Bibi, we call on you from here to announce the end of the war in exchange for the return of all hostages. The war is effectively over. We know it's over. You can't fool us. Now, this war has killed more than 34,000 Palestinians, according to Gaza's local health officials, caused widespread destruction and plunged the territory in an unprecedented humanitarian crisis. There's been a lot of damage done. Human life and property. And the whole thing should never have started. We can't forget how it started. It started with Hamas attacking Israel, which seemed out of character. It didn't seem like it was something they were going to do. But again, they are influenced by Iran, and Iran is influenced by Russia. And Russia benefits from this war going on. It takes the eyes of the world off of what's going on in Ukraine, and it helps to dirty up Joe Biden in order to help Donald Trump win re-election. I know that sounds like a conspiracy theory, and honestly, I don't know that it's true, but all the facts point to that direction. the idea that Vladimir Putin or Republicans would try to create a bad scenario in order to stain Joe Biden. Well, we talked about that earlier, and that's exactly the kind of thing that they would do. Nonetheless, this war needs to end. It needs to be over. It needs to be done. Too many innocent people are dying because of terroristic minds going at it. Hamas and Benjamin Netanyahu. And yes, I'm saying he has the mind of a terrorist. Just look at his actions. Just look at what he says. That motherfucker's a terrorist and he needs to go. All right. Democratic staffers on Capitol Hill were recently discussing the state of the House in a group chat when one posted a meme from The Simpsons to illustrate the point. The choice? Two knife-wielding monkeys fighting as onlookers surround them in a circle and cheer them on. The implication was the monkeys were the House Republicans and the bystanders were the Democrats. And let's be honest, that's a pretty accurate description. Now, while Republicans retain the House majority, the extent of the infighting has become glaringly apparent in recent weeks, most notably with Marjorie Taylor Greene threatening to call for a vote to oust Speaker Mike Johnson. Now, publicly, Democrats are avoiding giving Republicans what coaches would call bulletin board material, a slight or an insult around which the GOP could rally. But they also want to project an air of seriousness as an implicit contrast to the Republicans' ineptitude. So House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries smiled for just a second when asked Wednesday if Democrats are enjoying Republicans' misfortune. Then he launched into a very measured and dull answer. We're going to continue to keep the focus on getting results for the American people and delivering real results on their behalf. Oh, that's a boilerplate political answer. But that's what he's got to do. He can't take joy in the failures of the Republican Party in the House. He's got to play this out, let them hang themselves. That's exactly what they're doing. Now, aside from the ongoing will she or will she not ouster saga with Green, Republican disunity has shown up in many other ways, such as Johnson allowing Democrats to carry all or much of the responsibility for passing things, including an annual spending deal, renewal of a controversial spying law, and the $61 billion Ukraine aid deal. While the Republicans do have the majority in the House, they certainly don't have the power in the House. They definitely don't have the power in the House. And the reason they don't have the power is because they don't have unity. It's more like two or three parties within the Republican Party. And if that's where you're at and you can't agree on things, you can't get anything done. And that has been proven to be the case. They can't get anything done unless they get help from the Democrats. And thankfully, the Democrats have helped them out. But this isn't good news for Republicans when it comes to the election. You can bet there's going to be a lot of talking about how the Republicans did nothing and anything that was done was actually done by the Democrats. How do you think that's going to play for them in the election for these members of the House of Representatives, particularly for the Republicans? It's not going to play well. It's just not. They know that. Democrats know that. And all the Democrats have to do is sit around and wait while they fuck themselves over, the Republicans. Now, on Wednesday, for the first time since 2004, with six Republicans voting with Democrats, the House GOP lost a vote on a motion to recommit, the congressional equivalent of an inside-the-park home run in baseball, the last-ditch parliamentary move stopped a pro-mining bill from passing and was a rare floor win to the Democratic Party. Bill is expected to be brought up again next week. Now, see, this is something I thought would happen long ago. The Democrats could vote like they want to vote, and because they're so divided in the Republican Party, they could probably get some Republican votes and get things passed. That wasn't the case at first. but we can now see that starting to happen. So there are some cracks in the facade with the Republican Party. That was just the latest embarrassment for the House Republicans, topping off a week when Democratic leaders publicly offered to allow Johnson to remain in his job by voting to table Green's challenge, should it come up. Now, while Jeffries took the high road at the staffer level, at least some degree of schadenfreude is apparent. And that's basically talking about embarrassment and that sort of thing. Yeah, it's going pretty well in the House of Representatives for the Democrats. It's not going so well for us because a lot more could get done if the Democrats had control and the Republicans weren't so adamant about blocking everything. But again, what we have to do, unless some people resign from the Republican Party and somehow the Democrats do get power, Hakeem Jeffries would be the Speaker of the House, then there'd be a mad rush to get things done before the election in November. I'm not sure if that will happen. I was talking to somebody the other day and said there was a rumor that suggested there was a threat against Marjorie Taylor Greene. If you bring this up and you ask for a vote of no confidence, then you will find two or three Republican representatives resigning on the spot, which would hand the majority over to the Democrats. Now, I'm not sure if that's true. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, we've already seen a number of Republicans just get frustrated and disgusted by what's going on, throwing up their hands and walking out the door. So maybe that's part of the pressure that we're seeing from or some of the pressure on Marjorie Taylor Greene. But we'll have to wait and see. She keeps threatening, but she hasn't come through as yet. They've been back in session for 2 weeks, still hasn't done anything yet, but flap her lips and say she's going to do it, make those threats. But again, we haven't seen jack shit. All right, we are going to wrap up. No, we're not going to wrap up. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. We are back on the Rational Boomer podcast, and I just want to say this. If I appear tired or a little slower than I normally am, it's probably because I am, and I'll tell you why. Yesterday, I recorded 3 podcasts in getting ready for this period of time when I'm away. I did an interview or a show with Ed, which will be coming up Tuesday. I did a show with Eric, which will be coming up Wednesday. Today, this is my second podcast. I did a recording earlier with Jace from Texas. He'll come up Thursday. And I'm doing all the same TikTok. So I'm not used to working hard. This isn't hard work for me. But when you have to do 2 or 3 of them a day, it's a little taxing on a 64-year-old body, so forgive me if I appear to be a little slower than usual. Now, in Donald Trump's criminal trial last week, the last witness on the stand was Hope Hicks. She's a close advisor to Donald Trump, probably the closest advisor to Donald Trump. She was on the inner circle or in the inner circle. But she went on the witness stand, and she gave some pretty damning evidence. It was not a good day for Donald Trump. It was a great day for the prosecution. Not a good day for Hope Hicks either. Now, you remember back during the January 6th commission and their hearings, a young woman by the name of Cassidy Hutchinson, who was the chief of staff, I think, for Donald Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, she was kind of in the mix too, in the middle of things. And for a time prior to her testimony, she was represented by a Trump-paid-for lawyer. Well, she quickly found out that she was being played here. She fired that lawyer, and she went in there, was very brave, and told the truth. Now, a lot of people are trying to make the comparison between Hope Hicks and Cassidy Hutchinson. I will tell you right now, there is no comparison. Cassidy Hutchinson did what she knew to be right. It was important for her, her career, and what was right, what was true. That was important to her. Hope Hicks, on the other hand, she stuck with Donald Trump for 10 years. In those 10 years, she wasn't able to figure out what kind of creepy motherfucker he is. She had to be subpoenaed to testify, so she didn't want to do it. And when she went up there, she realized very quickly the only option she had was to tell the truth. And then toward the end of her testimony, she started to cry. No one understood why she started to cry. And I don't know that anybody's come up with an exact answer for it, but I can tell you this. My perception tells me that she went up there and did what she had to do in order to save herself. And then after it was done, she realized that she had to throw the guy she reveres, Donald Trump, even to this day reveres Donald Trump. She had to throw him under the bus in order to save her life and do the right thing and not destroy her career. I'm not so sure that her career isn't destroyed, but that's what she did. And she felt sorrowful about having to do that. You see the difference between Cassidy Hutchinson and Hope Hicks? Now, that said, I appreciate what Hope Hicks did, and she did what she was supposed to do. She did the right thing, so I give her credit for that. But in her heart, I know she's still a fan, a supporter of Donald Trump. And I don't care who you are, how nice you are, if you still support Donald Trump, you're either fucking stupid or you're complicit. Just my thoughts. I don't know if anybody agrees with me, but it doesn't matter. That's what I think. So anyway, former prosecutor and current MSNBC host Katie Fang had little sympathy for Hope Hicks during a discussion over the tearful testimony given by the former Donald Trump House aide. During an appearance on the Alex Witch Show on Saturday, Fang stopped just short of cursing while blatantly stating, "I have no sympathy for her," when talking about Hicks, who was appearing as a prosecution witness in Donald Trump's trial. Now, with multiple commentators expressing concern over the torment Hicks appears to be suffering for having to testify against the man she reportedly still admires, Fang wasn't having it. I like Katie Fang, by the way. If you've seen her on MSNBC, I'm sure you probably do too. She's pretty much to the point, and she's not afraid to say what she thinks. She said, "I don't have any sympathy for her, and I will stand true with the idea that I don't know why she cried, and I don't really care." She chose to go back to Trump's orbit. She was treated as family. She knew what he was all about in public and private worlds of Donald Trump, and she was subpoenaed to appear. See, Katie and I are on the same wavelength. It's not like she volunteered to show up. So in my opinion, you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. I mean, there's nobody with clean hands in this. In my opinion, I don't think Hope Hicks deserves any sympathy. She went on to say, "What about the thousands of Americans that were damaged by the Trump administration and the fact that she went back to try to help him get through another run at 2020 in 2020? She said, "It's galling to me." And so tough stuff," she continued after she appeared to want to use another word. You had to show up, Hope Hicks, but I will give you give her some small modicum of credit that it seems to me she told the truth. So, you know, I agree with Katie Fang, and I think anybody who looks at it reasonably understands the situation. Donald Trump was able to do the things he did when he was president and after he was president because he had help from his inner circle of people. He had help from politicians, Republican politicians. Had it not been for them, Donald Trump wouldn't be able to do anything. So I think that anybody that was there to help him, either in a small way or a big way, is complicit in all the shit we've had to deal with for the past 7.5 years. I think that Hope Hicks is one of the many guilty people that helped Donald Trump get away with the shit he did. Thankfully, she did the right thing, and she told the truth, and she basically sunk Donald Trump, at least as much as she could. But I have no sympathy either. None. Cassidy Hutchinson, she deserves respect. Hope Hicks, no. She's still a fucking Trump humper. All right, there's a key detail in the official transcript of the testimony of Donald Trump's aide Hope Hicks that is even more incriminating to the former president's criminal case than previously been reported. And this was said by a law professor. Hicks testified in the New York criminal case where her former boss stands accused of committing felonies in connection with covering up hush money payments made to Stormy Daniels. Legal analysts have suggested that Hicks' testimony was damaging for the president. I think we all know that. So New York University law professor Ryan Goodman, who often discusses Trump's legal woes on CNN, said on Saturday that the transcript of the testimony showed more than reports that surfaced from the courtroom. Transcripts of Hope Hicks' final Q&A is even more incriminating than some reports. Trump not only communicates it would have been bad to have that story come out before the election. He then added Trump also links it to Cohen's hush money. Had Michael not made the payment, is what he said. Goodman also included a screenshot of the printed version of the ex-aide's testimony. Did he say anything about the timing of the news reporting regarding the transcript shows Hicks was asked regarding the purported hush money payment? Yes, she replied. He wanted to know how it was playing and just my thoughts and opinion about the story versus having the story, a different kind of story before the campaign had Michael not made the payment. So he was basically looking to see if it worked. And if he's looking to see if it worked, well, then clearly he did it for the reason to influence the election, which is where the crime is. There's been a lot of focus on the first part of her comments, but the last line, Goodman points out, confirms that Trump knew about Cohen paying the money. And of course he did. Michael Cohen would never just do this out of the goodness of his heart. Hope Hicks said as much. He doesn't have it in him. He's too self-serving. He's too selfish. Because remember, Michael Cohen, for as many people who like him now because he's speaking out about Donald Trump, Michael Cohen was a despicable fuck. He was out bullying people for Donald Trump's benefit for years. So don't get too tied in. Don't get too sucked in with Michael Cohen because he's not a good person. He's useful to us now because he can give us evidence to put Donald Trump away. But after it's said and done, he's not worth having around. He was a bad lawyer. And when I say bad, I mean an unethical lawyer. He may have been a good lawyer, but he was unethical. And while he did go to jail because he benefited Donald Trump, that's on him. Bucker shouldn't have done it. I don't feel sorry for the time he spent in jail either, any more than I feel sorry for Hope Hicks. We use him for what we need, and then we discard him because he's just like so much filth, like anybody tied to Donald Trump for any period of time. All right. Donald Trump's not done whining. He is trying everything to discount and discredit anybody who's prosecuting him. Clearly, he's doing it in the Manhattan District case, but he doesn't stop there. He's got a bit of a hard-on for Special Counsel Jack Smith. He recently accused Smith of evidence tampering in connection with a criminal documents case in Florida, but the alleged issue stems from something the former president did, and that's coming from a New York Times reporter. Now, Trump on Friday railed against the classified documents criminal case he faces in Florida, accusing Smith of evidence tampering and demanding the entire case be dropped. We've heard this song and dance before. Never worked. It will never work. But he feels like if he keeps pounding on this, somebody will bend for him. That might have been the case when he was running his company or even when he was president, but not no more. That's not happening anymore. The quote goes, "It has always been clear that the documents case is nothing but an election interference scam concocted by crooked Joe Biden, deranged Jack Smith, and their hacks and thugs." Alan Fuhrer, who covers all matters legal and illegal for the Times, flagged a report from the conservative outlet, The Gateway Pundit. That site recently declared bankruptcy after facing a defamation lawsuit, according to prior news reports. The report claims Jack Smith admits FBI messed with the boxes containing classified documents they seized from Trump. Fuhrer, however, says that the evidence tampering alleged in the story was, according to a filing, by defense lawyers in this case. Oh, we can believe them, can't we? And it was caused by Trump's own insistence that a special master review the documents after the seizure during the search of Mar-a-Lago. Surely, if the defense lawyers working on this case believed there had been evidence tampering, they would have immediately raised the issue with Judge Cannon, but they didn't. He added, but at least at this point, no such issues have been raised. He's absolutely right. If there's been some kind of mishandling of the documents or some violation, the defense attorneys most certainly would have made a complaint to Judge Cannon, and no doubt Judge Cannon would have probably done anything they asked, but they never asked. So how is there a violation? This is the incompetence, ineptitude of Donald Trump. He just spews whatever comes out of his mouth. He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. He's not even on the same page as the lawyers. He'll say anything in hopes it gets him some traction in the media, because that's all he really cares about, is the perception of Donald Trump by the people of this country. Donald Trump would be terrified to know that 70% of this country hate his fucking guts, think he's a criminal, and think he belongs in jail. On MSNBC, host Nicole Wallace, another one of the few I like, asked the Merry Trump Show podcast host and Trump critic what advice she has for President Joe Biden on defeating ex-President Donald Trump again. Well, who would know better? His niece, Mary Trump, who's dealt with him all her life, even sued him. I don't know what the status on that lawsuit is at this point. But she also happens to be a psychiatrist and or psychologist. She understands the psychosis that Donald Trump suffers with, and she understands her uncle, and she understands his illness. And make no mistake, this motherfucker is mentally ill. Now, Mary was a guest on Thursday's edition of Deadline White House to discuss the Trump hush money election interference trial. In the first two segments, Wallace asked Mary if she had any advice for Biden. Mary said, I think that it's pretty similar to the advice I would have had in 2020, which is he needs to be relentlessly mocked at every turn. I've said this too. He's a narcissist. That's the thing he hates the most. We see in the courtroom that he's not handling the circumstances well. He's not handling the confinement or the fact that he has no power in this space. And that's why another reason last week was sort of a demoralizing for him, because the Supreme Court gave him a much needed boost. So it would be so much better if he were just forced to wallow in the consequences of his action. We see him looking like he's falling asleep. Whether or not he's falling asleep, he's complaining about the temperature. And you know something that I don't see being paid attention to? They aren't bending for him here, but it's really important. Donald Trump is there, trapped in the courtroom because of what he did. There are a lot of other people trapped in the courtroom as well because of what he did. He doesn't seem to care that they are also cold and tired and don't want to be there. And as I've said, what's going to happen is this jury is going to hate his guts by the time they get done, because they're seeing who Donald Trump truly is. It's not a soundbite or a short stint on TV. They're seeing him every day, all day, and they have to deal with his bullshit. And they aren't going to like him when it's all said and done. She goes on to say, so it's just another example of how selfish he is and how he doesn't care about anybody else's circumstances, even if he caused them. So I think just hammering away on his weaknesses and his frailty And I mean that psychology that better it is because he's been allowed to skate for so long by pretending. Just because he yells louder and is more forceful in his delusions and his mendacity, that's he's somehow more fit. And that goes to what I said before. It's about being a bully. A bully only works. A bully only wins if somebody acquiesces to them. He gets in their face and he yells. This is the exact experience I had with my father. He's a grown adult. He's a wild man, and I'm a little kid. He gets in my face and tells me what he wants me to do, or yells at me or calls me names. What do I do? Well, I'm fucking 7. I don't do anything. The same thing worked with Donald Trump when he was in business and the president. He had all the power. They had none. He got in their face until they acquiesced. And that's what Donald Trump has learned. What he failed to learn is he's in a different arena now. He's in an entirely different arena where people aren't going to back down. They're going to push back. And that is the worst thing you can do to a bully, because in the heart of hearts, they are fucking cowards. So the moment somebody pushes back, they acquiesce. And this is where Donald Trump loses. Now, there's one guy on TV. I don't know if I like him or not. Some days I do, some days I don't. I think he's kind of arrogant, but occasionally he comes through with some things that make some sense. Real-time host Bill Maher. He railed against Attorney General Merrick Garland for not prosecuting former President Donald Trump more aggressively during the 2024 election. 2020 election is, I think, what they mean. The comedian opened his new rules segment by claiming Garland was given his job because he got screwed over from being appointed to the Supreme Court. I don't know if that's true, but could be. Trump faces 4 criminal indictments, 4 separate jurisdictions for his handling of classified material, hush money payments, and all the other shit. Maher argued that Garland has let Trump off the hook by acting as a purse dog and bending over backwards in order to appear to be fair. Moreover, he compared Garland to a liberal judge in every 70s cop movie, the one who always lets the psychopath out on a technicality. Well, this is what Bill Maher said. He said, giving a guy a job because he got screwed over for another job isn't a good reason to give a guy a job, especially if the job is attorney general, and especially if it's during a time when we need a tough AG to catch a real criminal. Merrick Garland, who is the attorney general I speak of, and who, spoiler alert, sucks, who was, you may recall, President Obama's pick for Supreme Court in 2016 after the Clintons murdered Justice Scalia with a pillow. And these are jokes. I'm not a comedian, but this is what Bill Maher does. And while our government dysfunction continues to grow, one thing remained sacrosanct. When a Supreme Court justice dies, the president gets to fill the seat until Mitch McConnell said, fuck that new rule. Fuck you. Garland never even got a hearing. So when Biden got elected, the Democrats said that they wouldn't it be funny as payback if we gave Garland the attorney general job? And that's how we got Attorney General Barney Fife, a man who epitomizes the strange stupor that comes over Democrats whenever they have to choose a top lawman. They worry so much about appearing nonpartisan. I say the same thing. Democrats always want to take the high road. The only problem is they're fighting against somebody who's always in the gutter. And when somebody's in the gutter, it's not a fair fight because there are no rules for somebody who's in the gutter. The Democrats follow the rules, and it's hard to win a fight when somebody's not fighting fairly. As much as I appreciate Michelle Obama, when they go low and we go higher, that's not a good strategy when you're dealing with somebody as low as the Republican Party and Donald Trump. You have to get down in the fucking muck and fight it out and fight to the finish. It's unfortunate. We don't like it, but that's the only way we can win. And at this point, when we're talking about Republicans and we're talking about Donald Trump, there is no other option. We must win. because our country and all of us are in peril as long as Donald Trump has any possibility of becoming president and the Republicans have any possibility of regaining a certain amount of power. So I agree with Bill Maher on this one. And that's sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I'm not a big fan of his. I think he's funny sometimes. I think he makes some cogent points often, but I think he goes off track sometimes and I don't even know what the fuck he's talking about. All right. Now, here's an interesting story. Because this guy we've known as a villain, and this guy we've known as a Trump umper. I'm talking about Representative Dan Crenshaw of Texas, a Republican. But he's joined a growing number of House Republicans in denouncing Marjorie Taylor Greene and the scant few others who are publicly calling for the ouster of Mike Johnson. And the reason they're doing this isn't because they've seen the light. It's because they know it's ridiculous and will do nothing but hurt the Republican Party. Now, Crenshaw said she needs her time in the spotlight, you know, and it's been a while, and I think it's one last-ditch effort to get attention. It's what she's looking for. Now, Neil Cavuto of Fox News said, and it's based in what exactly, Crenshaw continued, that Mike Johnson brought bills to the floor that were necessary for our national security that the vast majority of members wanted to vote on. So allowing the democratic process to move forward, our process that we have in our Constitution to move forward, is apparently the crime of the century, according to these people, which warrants a motion to vacate. See what I mean? This isn't what you'd expect out of Dan Crenshaw, but we're getting very close to an election, and they finally are saying, hey, we're doing some fucked up shit here. Maybe we ought to step back from it and try to do the right thing so we can get reelected. Honestly, I think it's a little too late. So Green filed a motion to vacate Johnson's seat before the Easter break and announced that she will force a vote on the issue next week. So far, only two other members of Congress have publicly backed her plan. MAGA Republican Representative Paul Gosar, well, of course he did. He's a fucking goofball. And Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky. And plenty of Republicans have denounced it. For his part, Donald Trump reportedly finds Greene's actions embarrassing. This is the thing with Marjorie Taylor Greene. At one point, she was fully ensconced in the MAGA group and in Donald Trump's back pocket. But now MAGA is fighting against her. The normal Republicans are fighting against her. And Michael Johnson went down to see Donald Trump. And Donald Trump says, yeah, you know, he's a good guy. Don't vacate him. So Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't have a fucking friend. She doesn't have one friend that she can look to. But like the Republicans do, they don't back up or give up when they know it's a losing cause. They just double down and triple down and will wait till they're absolutely politically murdered. And she will be. That's not to say she won't get reelected, because whatever district she's from in Georgia is apparently fucked up. If they voted for her in the first place and then reelected her, there's some problems in that district. Now, Dan Crenshaw went on to say, now, what they do is they make it impossible for the speaker to actually have leverage over the Democrats and get things that we want, like border security. You mean like that bipartisan border bill that should have passed? Marjorie Taylor Greene has never tried to lay out a plan to get border security done along with the supplemental package. Thomas Massie has never done anything on that front. She's never written legislation on asylum reform or anything to do with border security, and a lot of us have. And so they make it impossible for us to have leverage with a very slim majority, and then they turn around and punish the speaker when they can't make a deal that they want, and then they say, oh, it was all their fault, and now the real patriots are taking over. It's a game, and voters have to stop falling for it. Stan Crenshaw. They're not fighting for you. They're fighting for your attention. That's a good point. That's all that Republicans are worried about is attention and perception. Now, of course, last fall, Representative Matt Gaetz orchestrated the ouster of then House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. When that was all said and done, that was an absolute embarrassment. It took 15 times to get McCarthy in. And then when they kicked him out, they had to scrape the bottom of the barrel to take some unknown guy like Mike Johnson and make him Speaker of the House because he was the only one that they could get enough people to vote for. And what they got is an incompetent fucking goof. He's trying to be better now, and I'm not sure why. Maybe he realizes what's at the end of this fucking tunnel. They're going to lose big in November. He will no longer be Speaker of the House, and he's going to try to figure out some way to salvage what's left of his career, because there ain't much left of his career at this point. This is what I've talked about before, that the Republicans, as much as people want to say, oh, they could win the House, they could win the Senate, or they could win the presidency, just does not make sense. Everything they've done since 2020 has hurt them, overturning Roe v. Wade, marginalizing LGBTQ folks, ultimately trying to make that illegal to just be who you are. Then you've got the House of Representatives, who has done absolutely nothing. All the bills like the infrastructure bill and the COVID relief bill, they take credit for now, but they didn't vote for it. That's on the record. That is going to be repeated in commercials and by politicians. They're in a bad spot right now, and they know it. And some of them that have a little sense are starting to back away, but it's too late. They waited too long to back away. And still, there are other people that stand right next to Donald Trump and will double and triple down until they go off the fucking cliff with Donald Trump. When you look at all that, please tell me how you expect Republicans to do well in November. It's just not possible. Everything they've done is wrong. Everything they've done is bad. Everything they've done has cost them support, cost them money, and cost them votes. Think about how close an election can be. Very close. It doesn't take much for Republicans to lose votes or support and then get killed in an actual election. In order for a Republican to win a presidential candidate, they have to get all the Republican votes and some independent votes. That's the only way they win. But Donald Trump and none of the people in the Republican Party can count on a unified party. So they can't get even all of their own party's votes. And when that happens, it's impossible to win an election. All right, we are going to wrap up the Rational Boomer podcast. I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. I hope you have a great day, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Boomer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time.